As Canada's largest environmental law charity, EcoJustice has used the courts to protect our natural spaces and eliminate harmful chemicals and contaminants from our air and water. Working on behalf of clients, they have won dozens of precedent-setting legal victories that combat the climate crisis, protect wildlife and habitats, strengthen environmental policy, and hold polluters to account. My name is Steve Brereton, Communications and Policy Officer at the Catherine Donnelly Foundation. I'm pleased to welcome EcoJustice Executive Director Devin Page to discuss their work. Devin, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for having me.
The courts have often been places where businesses and the powerful flex their legal and financial muscle. Protecting our environment through the courts is a lengthy, expensive, and uncertain process. Why has EcoJustice made this work their focus?
Yeah, great question. At its highest level, EcoJustice believes that the power of law allows us to achieve transformational and lasting change. But let me talk about that more particularly. EcoJustice has two primary activities, litigation and law reform. And what we try to do with litigation is achieve precedence in the court. We work on the precedent-setting cases, and the results we believe provide durable long-term protection for the environment. And I think the bottom line for us is we get results that force behavior change on the part of government and industry that in a way that can be distinguished from, you know, equally effective, but different modes of operating, such as public awareness campaigns or things like that. We want to wield power as effectively as possible, and wanting that to achieve environmental outcomes takes us directly to the courts.
Right. So EcoJustice and CDF have enjoyed a long and successful relationship. In 2011, so quite a long time ago, we first partnered to pursue the right to a healthy environment as part of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So there's that court piece there, but part of that was also policy and lobbying work, which you also alluded to. Maybe you can speak to a little bit to the issue and some of the gains we've seen over that period.
Sure. So EcoJustice does enjoy success in the courts. And for a lot of folks, that's our raison d'etre. But what many Canadians don't appreciate is that Canada, in terms of its environmental laws, is one of the world's laggards when we're compared with G7 nations or OECD nations. Canada typically ranks at the bottom of the pack when it comes to protecting the environment. But for us, more importantly, protecting Canadians' rights to a healthy environment. So early on, EcoJustice realized that if we wanted to achieve durable long-term protection for the environment through the courts, we would have to have the legal tools to achieve those. And that meant law reform. And so, well, it was over 10 years ago, what we decided to do was identify law reform goals that would frankly provide the biggest impact for Canadians and for the environment. And the marquee goal was recognition of the right to a healthy environment. There was good context for that. Internationally, there was an environmental rights revolution, and sophisticated industrialized nations around the world were either passing laws or were changing their constitutions to incorporate recognition of the right to a healthy environment. And by the early 2000s, Canada was one of the few industrialized nations that had no recognition of the right to a healthy environment. So we decided to embark on a strategy that combined both litigation and law reform to achieve recognition. Now, we weren't big enough or powerful enough at that time to do it. And so we sought partners who would support our work and enable it. And frankly, the Catherine Donnelly Foundation was the sole partner. And through a significant series of grants over an extended period, which is exceptional in the Canadian funding community, the Catherine Donnelly Foundation enabled us to build a litigation and law reform strategy towards achieving recognition of the right to a healthy environment. In the early days, what that was about was defending the rights of Indigenous populations in Canada who are marginalized as a result of decisions that basically put pollution in their backyard. So for example, we represented the Omgenang First Nation over a series of years because they're surrounded by what's called Chemical Valley. One of the World Health Organization's top 10 polluted sites in North America is Sarnia, home to the petrochemical industry And Sarnia and the petrochemical industry surrounded the Amgenang First Nation. And it's an area where the petrochemical industry is regularly releasing pollutants and flaring, and there's noise and fire and gas. And you could literally, on the children's playground, bounce a basketball and have it bounce over into the fence of some factory refining facility. And the Amgenang First Nations were being excluded from decision-making or even information sharing about what was happening in on their land and in their air. And so we fought for them for a series of years to try to get effective protection and to get them involved in decision-making. We achieved outcomes. We didn't achieve everything we wanted, but what we got was new regulations related to air quality in that area. And we got them included in the process for being aware of what's happening with the airshed. That was the first attempt, but EcoJustice recognized that the ultimate goal is amendment of our constitution. Amendment of our constitution, so it particularly says that every Canadian has the right to breathe clean air, to drink clean water, and to live in a safe climate. Constitutional amendment is tough in Canada. There's a particular formula and it involves negotiation on part of the government. So the step towards that is getting the charter as we currently have it interpreted to encompass the right to a healthy environment. So another initiative that was backstopped by the Catherine Donnelly Foundation was what we call the youth climate case. And what we sought to do was represent seven Ontario youth in challenging the Ontario government's decision to repeal climate legislation that had been put in place by a previous administration. And the case was based on the fact that doing that breached charter rights of these children. In particular, it breached the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. So we're intending to achieve a precedent-setting interpretation of Section 7 and right to life, liberty, and security of the person to encompass the right to live in a healthy environment. And the second part of that was Section 15 of the Charter, seeking, and that's the right to equality. And what we're saying is youth are going to bear a disproportionate burden of our leaders' failure to protect them from worsening effects of climate change. The good news about that is we were able to launch the case, and we're the only case of its type in Canada to have survived the attempt to strike out the case by the Ontario government. So it's set for trial in the fall. And it'll be the first time in Canada the charter has been interpreted to encompass the right to a healthy environment as envisioned in the case. But there is this need to ensure that there are complementary effective laws that are being developed concurrently. So we were working all throughout this to try to get the federal government, if not change the charter, to incorporate the right to a healthy environment in laws that we're developing. So one of Canada's cornerstone environmental laws, called the Canadian Environmental Protection Act, had not been amended since 1999. And there's no way that a law that's 20 years old is anymore a cornerstone law. We've been working for over 10 years, enabled by the Catherine Donnelly Foundation, to see that law modernized. But one of the things we were specifically asking for was recognition of the right to a healthy environment. And last year, we had assurances from the federal minister of the environment that the act would encompass that. And the act was introduced this spring for the purpose of being passed by the fall. And it does incorporate elements. Now we're going to work through that parliamentary period to strengthen it. But what we're seeing that we directly relate to support of the Catherine Donnelly Foundation is progress both on the litigation front and on the law reform front that will get us a long way towards recognition of a right to a healthy environment in Canada.
Right. So this is kind of a four-track process. We have sort of networking, we have public mobilization, and then, of course, as you've detailed, we have both the courts and legislative processes. You talk about some of your expectations for what will happen in the next couple of months. You've talked about the possibility of a fall start to the charter case. And you've talked about moving the Canadian Environmental Protection Act through, you know, through Parliament moving forward. Those things aren't finished, I guess, but, you know, what does the work ahead look like for EcoJustice?
Right. Well, and I mentioned in the short term, we're headed to trial on the youth climate case. And that's a lot of work, frankly, with experts. We have seven experts, international experts, related to what's happening with Canada's climate and the risk posed to youth. We will have to mount and defend that case. And we've been preparing for that for over a year, and we'll continue to prepare, and the pressure will increase. And then when governments introduce a law, you've only engaged the battle. You certainly haven't finished anything. So the introduction of the law was opportunity for us to see in the first instance what they can see of our request to recognize the right to health environment. And we aren't seeing everything that we need. So that bill is soon to go into committee stage, and we'll be investing heavily in getting amendments to the law that make sure that we have explicit, clear, and strong protection of Canadians' right to a healthy environment. We're not seeing that currently. We're seeing the start of that. We're seeing the prospect of that. And relative to what we had, we're seeing remarkable change. It would be unfair to not give the government some credit for having some vision through this law, but it's not everything that it needs to be, and it's not equivalent to what's available in other countries around the world. And then concurrently, laws are passed, but oftentimes they come to life through regulations. They come to life with complementary laws and policies that talk about here's its practical application. So EcoJustice envisions that besides us working hard to get a strong law passed, we'll be working on those complementary pieces for some time to come. And then the other pieces, our work in these areas has spawned other work. I mean, there's a more common conversation about Canadians believing that they should be, their right to a healthy environment should be protected. So we're seeing the current work on law reform and litigation spawn other elements as well. So I think it'll just grow. But right now, those are the two marquee pieces that we're going to be investing our time in.
Fantastic. And lastly, I'd like to ask you about the role of foundations in sparking and sustaining new or untested ideas or approaches. Why is it important for foundations specifically also to take risks and be champions?
You know, it's so important. The Catherine Donnelly Foundation support for us was material. It was large relative to funding that we received, and it was multi-year. And in the first instance, what it was validating for a vision. And that counts for a lot. That counts back at the office when people are feeling disillusioned about progress or worried about how long we can durably continue the work. It means that we can commit long-term to achieve outcomes. But the second thing about it, what we were seeking, we didn't receive broad support for from the philanthropic community. And in large part, they believed it wasn't possible given where the government was at that time. What the risk taken by the Catherine Donnelly Foundation did is it not only validated for us that we were on the right track, it validated for other philanthropic organizations that we may be on the right track as well. We used the support of the Catherine Donnelly Foundation to say to others, this work has value. These are the outcomes we need to achieve for Canadians, and you should likewise support us. So the result, frankly, was a multiplier. We leveraged the Catherine Donnelly support, and without it, it wouldn't have happened. But what it effectively has done has allowed us to grow the program. And so we'll see recognition of the right to a healthy environment in Canada. No one would have ever believed that was possible even 10 years ago. And we'll see more. We'll start to build on this to see stronger protections for Canadians' right to a healthy and vibrant environment that'll be spawned and result from this.
Great. Devin, thanks very much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for your interest. And thank you to the Catherine Donnelly Foundation. Amazing, amazing partners.